I'm Barbara Glickstein. You're tuned in to Health Styles, brought to you by the Center for Health Media and Policy at Hunter College, where we look at all forms of media and its influence on public policy and health policy, and also on how the public understands that policy, something critically important to us here at Health Styles. And for myself as a public health nurse, there's nothing better than finding someone who can do it with funny. Jen Sorensen is my guest. Her cartoons appear in approximately 20 alternative newspapers, including her local weekly, The Austin Chronicle. They're published regularly in The Nation, Ms. Magazine, The Progressive, Politico, and on a variety of websites, including The Daily Kos and NPR.org. We certainly know that the Kaiser Health Foundation continues to poll Americans about their views on the Affordable Care Act. The numbers have been pretty consistent. Basically, more people have an unfavorable view about it still today. And some of that probably is contributed by how confusing it is. You've heard me say this before, listeners, that with exception, most journalists and most media continue to cover the discussion of health care reform, certainly before it passed into law, only focusing on the politics. And a lot of that was just the political infighting between the two parties on the passage of the law. Not much reporting then was on how the law would impact individuals and families. So I always say we give the media about a C- or a D during that period of time. It's actually gotten a little bit better. But the act is complex. We certainly have covered the rollout. That seems to have gotten better and fixed. Some provisions haven't been rolled out yet and won't be because the hostile political climate in Washington won't fund those to get passed or to be rolled out. But while all this is happening, thank goodness for you, Jen Sorensen. I love following your cartoons, and thank you for joining me on Health Styles.
Thank you so much. And thanks for having me.
Yes. So you're a visual artist. But there's text and great cartoon. Your cartoons have characters that speak. I know that your art form as a cartoonist is called a multi-panel format. Will you tell our listeners what that means so they can understand what they might be looking at when they go to your website, jensorensen.com, and look at your work?
Sure. I guess I work in a very particular genre of political cartooning that I guess has its home base in the Alternative News Weekly. And, famous examples of this would be This Modern World by Tom Tomorrow. Matt Groening's Life in Hell was one of the early pioneers in this format. And so my strip has sort of evolved out of that context, although it appears in a lot of other places now. But it's a political cartoon with usually four panels or can be more than that, where I try to delve a little deeper into issues than, say, the traditional political cartoon format, which, is just one panel. It can be a fairly simple illustration. I like to have a little more room to play around with ideas and go a little deeper.
So before we go into some of the very specific cartoons that you've committed to around the issue of health and health policy, health care reform, and there are many brilliant ones. What's a career like as a cartoonist? How do you spend your day? What's your creative work day like? I'm so curious myself.
Oh, that's a great question. One thing that has happened over the years is that I've become more diversified, and so I do the weekly strip, and that usually takes, I would say, anywhere from two full days, maybe two and a half days. The writing is the most unpredictable part of that process. And, sometimes you come up with something very quickly and the strip almost writes itself. And sometimes you get stuck and you're staring at a blank piece of paper for a really long time.
Is writer's block for cartoonists the same term, or do you have another one?
Sure. I think writer's block.
Works. That works. Cartoon block just makes me think of a block head character and part cartoonish, but we won't go there, I guess.
Right. So, sometimes, the writing takes longer than others, but I try to go with whatever topic is sort of moving me or making me angriest at the moment. And, that's generally a good guide. Something that you feel personally upset about, and also something that just lends itself to being made into a cartoon. Sometimes there are topics that I care about, but maybe they're difficult to make into something funny, or it takes, you know, takes a lot of work to do tasteful satire, I guess. So my typical workday, things there's other things that I do now as well, and that includes long form comics that I've done for Kaiser Health News and NPR, and I can talk a little more about those.
Yes.
And you know, basically, I did a comic for Kaiser Health News a couple of years ago called An Open Letter to the Supreme Court About Health Insurance. And it was about my experiences as a freelancer, just having all kinds of difficulty getting decent coverage. My husband was flat-out denied coverage for having a minor case of plantar fasciitis. And so he actually went without coverage for a while. This was very minor foot condition from jogging. We're both pretty healthy people. You know, we might have a few minor pre-existing conditions, but it was getting increasingly stressful having to worry about, you know, filling out these forms, being sure you get everything right, being afraid that you'd be dropped because you listed something incorrectly in your medical history. So I did this cartoon, sort of a longer form comic than, you know, my usual weekly strip for Kaiser Health News, and it was probably the most popular piece I've ever done. It turns out that there were an awful lot of people who were self-employed who felt their story wasn't being told in the media throughout this whole debate about the Affordable Care Act. And that was published right before the Supreme Court issued their ruling, basically allowing it to stand. And since then, Kaiser Health News has had me do another long-form comic about my experience just signing up for Obamacare last fall. And that was actually published in the spring, and it also appeared on NPR. And it also happened to be very popular. So I actually had a good experience signing up here in Texas. I was pleasantly surprised, you know, once I got past the initial glitches with the website, you know, I got a great plan, and I now have excellent coverage.
Well, I'm very happy to hear that, and I've been on your website a number of times, and in addition to your cartoons, you often will blog about either people's responses to the cartoon or comment on what's everybody so upset about. Okay, so the rollout, you know, there were glitches, and that was serious, but here we go, and here, look at its impact, and by all accounts, we know it's been successful, even in spite of everybody, many people not wanting to be in favor of it. And of course, we know it's not a perfect system. Probably you and I can talk about what maybe a perfect system would look like that is not insurance-based, maybe a single payer, or maybe something else. Everyone became eligible for Medicare, for example. The Medicaid rollout being another example of states that initially didn't want to participate are now realizing that was not the best decision for them as a state. But the idea that you were able to write about your own experience as a freelancer in and that cartoon. By the way, I mentioned before we went on air that I teach a health policy course at Hunter College School of Nursing, and I refer people to your political cartoons. I also refer them to Kaiser Health News on a regular basis and tell people if you only have 5 or 8 minutes to catch up on national health news, go there first.
They are a great resource.
They're a terrific resource. And even with all due respect to smart working people, a lot of people still are struggling with trying to understand the Affordable Care Act. So the visual way that you, the people that you have in your cartoons helping us understand it just makes me so glad to have it as a resource. And it makes me happy. I want to go back to something you said about your topics. You write about things that you're thinking about, passionate about, and also that make you angry. Can you talk more about that? How, because for me, Yuma is so persuasive. Being funny rather than ranting, which is something I can do, is not always very persuasive. And so can you talk to us about this idea, how humor is persuasive, and how you translate that anger into this humor?
Well, I do plenty of ranting behind the scenes.
A night at home with Jen.
It's not that I'm always laughing.
Okay, good.
My husband and I do a lot of ranting about the news. But I guess I do feel that it is more effective to get people to laugh about something or just, you know, or just to make fun of something than to beat people over the head with just some angry didactic message, because you're just not going to communicate with people that way. Now, I mean, sometimes it's good to, you know, if you're tweeting, you can just fire off some tweets, and you don't have to necessarily be as clever or, you know, as sensitive maybe as in a cartoon. But when you're crafting an actual cartoon, I think you want to, you know, you want to show, don't tell. And I've just found that to be the medium that works for me. And I think people appreciate it. And I've even heard from, you know, I do have some conservative readers who, you know, they kind of grumble like, oh, I don't often agree with you, but I still read you. So that's kind of a compliment.
Well, you know, I think it's really good that people across different political spectrums are having, whether it's a virtual conversation with each other or in person, because maybe that's part of the polarization that's going on right now. So I'm happy to hear that you're getting respectful correspondence from people who may not agree with your opinion or the facts that you're portraying in your cartoons, because I did read one review where you said, or it may have been something I listened to, that you're not necessarily taking a political position all the time. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, I really do just try to call it as I see it. And, you know, I just try to approach things from a very sort of empirical point of view, you know, and just look at the science. Look at the facts on the ground, and you know, I have a background actually in cultural anthropology, and I sort of feel like some of that feeds into my work. You know, I just I like to study the culture and maybe approach it from the margins a little bit. And while the work itself is certainly political, I mean, I have probably, you know, very strong political viewpoints on things. You know, I'm not trying to toe a party line. Really, I'm just sort of trying to give my perspective.
Are you, have you been either criticized, or has there been a time where you've created a cartoon that was judged by others as not being politically correct, or have concerns? And I know from your work, your lens of being very feminist and humanistic and fair. That's my editorial on it. But have you bumped up against any problems in any of your cartoons where you've had to look it back and wonder whether that was something you had to be concerned about?
Well, you know, there have been occasional internet comments. I mean, I think people sometimes interpret things creatively, and maybe, you know, I think some interpretations are probably a little more valid than others, but I haven't had a major flap, I guess, like some people have.
Yeah.
Where, you know, the whole, it's like an internet pile-on.
Yeah, good. I'm glad to hear that.
Someday that's probably going to happen, but, you know, I guess I feel like I am aware enough of social justice issues that I'm not going to make some of the obvious mistakes that some people make. I mean, I had to see there are some cartoons that have attracted controversy that are fairly obvious, like maybe the cartoonist didn't intend it to appear racist, but, you know, it's pretty obvious that,
yes,
that was not a good decision.
The recent one where about the watermelon lollipop. Yeah.
Exactly.
Of President Obama brushing his teeth. Yes, of course.
Like, how could you not know?
Yes. Well, you're absolutely right, Jen. As I said, I see that social justice frame and that fairness in your characters and the actors, as you sometimes refer to them in your cartoons. Let's go back to the influence of your work. As I mentioned, the Center for Health Media and Policy looks at forms of media that are influential in public policy, as well as helping to translate that policy to help every individual understand its impact, a translation of whether it's the science, the policy, or the health information that's being used to influence that policy, sometimes not real science or not real facts, and we know that's happening too much lately. So here you had two pieces in Kaiser Health News and PR. You've been, you've other, you know, incredible credits. And I'm just wondering, how far did it reach? Did you get to the Beltway?
Well, I know that a lot of Beltway types do read Kaiser Health News. It is a very important resource, and they're really smart wonks that work there. I mean, they really know their stuff, and I've met some of the people, and I really respect what they're doing. So I'm sure that it's being seen by Washington, D.C. types, and I think there have been other cartoons that I know, I've heard that basically they did reach the corridors of power. My Janet Yellen cartoon.
Yes.
Actually was seen by Janet Yellen.
tell the listeners about that cartoon.
Sure.
And what was the title of it, so they can find it on your site, Jen Sorensen, Sorensen.com.
Thank you. Yes, my name is misspelled about 90% of the time. So,
well, we want them to find you. We'll remind them again before the interview's up. So the name of that cartoon was?
It was Larry Summers versus Janet Yellen. And actually, it may have had another title that I'm not remembering.
We'll find it. We'll find it.
Anyway, in the meantime, it compared Larry Summers to Janet Yellen and basically showed why she would be a better candidate to chair the Fed. And, that whole debate about her, not having enough gravitas and some of the misogyny, really, that was just being tossed around at the time was pretty amazing. And, if you looked at her record, she clearly was extremely qualified and, more qualified than many men who had been nominated to chair the Fed.
Yes.
So I got pretty involved in that. I got very excited about Janet Yellen being named Fed Chair. And I found out basically that she had seen it because I won a Robert F. Kennedy Journalism Award last year. And it just so happened that she was in the audience she was there for someone else who had won an award. And I turned around and there she was. And so she said, "Oh yes, I saw that cartoon. I mentioned, that I had just drawn this cartoon about her." And so I know that people are seeing it, and they do run in Politico sometimes. So I think there's probably a lot of DC people reading that too.
That's just a fabulous story about meeting her and finding out that she knew your cartoon. I'm sure those are the kinds of moments that really make one's work feel quite satisfying, right?
Oh, it was a very special moment.
Yeah.
It was one of the thrills of my career, yes.
I know there are so many cartoons we can talk about. I love the goddess who visits the Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts, and in one of your comics, who goes around and has her hand in trying to clarify points. And what about that one? Maybe I'm telling you some of my favorites too, as we speak.
Right. I guess in that case, it seemed like the healthcare law had gone through just so many obstacles.
Oh, I lost you.
Oh, I'm still here. Can you hear me now?
Now I can. Okay. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. I think I may have just covered up the
mic
on my phone. Anyway, I'm bringing, Hellbent for Healthcare, featuring Hygieia, Greek goddess of wellness.
Yes.
This was, right. I mean, it seemed like the healthcare law had been through so many obstacles at this point and so many near-death experiences. And finally, we got everything passed. And so the website healthcare.gov has problems. I mean, admittedly, the rollout of that website was a disaster, but people were just leaping to the conclusion that the entire healthcare reform program was a train wreck. And so, to me, it just seemed like after all it's been through, you're really going to just toss it out the window because the website needs some more, some tech fixes. I guess that cartoon is an expression of my frustration of just watching this saga unfold, and then just, people are going to just give up on it because of, have a website.
As if none of us have had technical difficulties either on our own websites, although we're both in agreement that was a mess. And I think the government learned lots of lessons, not just how to fix that website, but I think it impacted the contract, the ways that contracts would be done, as well as the fact that I think the IT department will be much more involved in the management of those contracts. So blunder, yes. Repaired, yes. And working. So now all those other healthcare, in your other cartoon, healthcare mudgeons will have to find something else to be really annoyed about. The Affordable Care Act. And we know that we're coming up to a November election where there is, I think up until March of last year was when I kept a tally on this, there were 54 attempts to repeal the Affordable Care Act. There probably are some more since then. And people, it's an important race. And there are conversations about this being an opportunity to yet again overturn the law. I think it's not going to be an easy thing to do, but certainly what I see, all of this continued noise about it is not helping people understand or be able to let in the space, create the space to help them understand its positive impacts. We know that the goal is for 30 million to be insured. We have reached the first year's goal in sign up. We're coming into another year of signing up. I mentioned earlier the states have that didn't originally accept the Medicaid expansion are recognizing that was a failed decision and are rethinking that, including Florida, pretty unusual. So we're going to look forward to see your lens on this. I know that you create political cartoons about lots of other issues, not just healthcare reform. I'm just wondering, are you working on something now?
I'm in between deadlines at the moment. I will be writing a cartoon tomorrow, probably, although I'm not sure what it's going to be about yet. Possibly voter ID laws and voter suppression. I'm really worried about just the radicalization of the court system in the U.S. because it seems like there's almost a checkmate that opponents of healthcare reform seem to possibly have. I mean, I don't know if I trust the Roberts Court if this current case about the technicality of the wording in that one sentence in the Affordable Care Act.
Yes,
has come under so much scrutiny and controversy. Anyway, so that makes me a little nervous, and just the courts in general when it comes to voter ID laws and civil rights laws. It just seems like we're headed in kind of a bad direction there.
Well, there's so much. There's probably more ideas than time to create them, but we're counting on you to keep your finger on all the pulses that you always have your finger on in terms of the role that your political cartoons play in helping us take a breath, have a good laugh, and also see the poignancy in the way that you do, Jen Sorensen, my guest, the political cartoonist. In 2014, you won the Herb Lock Prize, and that's a prize that celebrates excellence in editorial cartooning. You're the first woman to receive that prize, a very highly distinguished prize. And I know that you have been asked this question before, but I will ask it again. In terms of gender and media and women in the political cartoon realm, how big a group are you?
We're a fairly small group, especially if you just isolate political cartoonists. I would say, the fact that I was maybe the first women, I think maybe there were 12 guys who had won before I did. That's probably a fairly accurate ratio. And editorial cartooning is such a small field to begin with. You know, our numbers are shrinking. I would say that, you know, that ratio is probably holds up to reality. However, in the broader scheme of things, if you look at the field of graphic journalism, nonfiction, comics, or just self-publishing, I just went to the Small Press Expo in Bethesda, Maryland, and the number of women creating comics now has grown so much since I started going to these conventions.
Yay.
In the 90s. And so there is definitely, I've seen so much change.
Yay.
In terms of the number of female cartoonists out there.
Good.
So, political cartooning, I think, maybe suffers from the fact that it's a very small group of people doing it anyway. Mm-hmm. But on the whole, I've actually been very encouraged by, all the other developments that I've seen with more and more women entering the field.
Yes. Well, I follow some of those other cartoonists as well, and I'm glad to see the field growing. You, on your website, again, Jen Sorensen, SORENSEN.com, it says you're a cartoonist, writer, and cultural panopticon, a word I had to look up. But you tell me, what does that mean?
As intended, is a little bit of a joke, but I guess I probably picked up that word from my anthropology courses in college. Mm-hmm. Foucault talked about the panopticon, the all-seeing eye. It's sort of a little tongue-in-cheek. I'm just kind of referring to myself as an all-seeing eye on the political landscape.
Well, thanks for everything, including having me the opportunity to look up a word, and now if I can pronounce it as well as you, I'll try and use it in my work.
It is a fun word to throw.
It is a fun word. It's a mouthful. It's a fun word, though. Well, Jen Sorensen, my guest, is a nationally syndicated political cartoonist. Her work has appeared in The Progressive, The Nation, Daily Kos, Austin Chronicle, NPR, Ms. Politico, and many other publications. You can go to her site at jensorensen.com, SORENSEN.com, and she tweets at Jen Sorensen. And Jen, we are offering as a premium to those who make a commitment to pledge to WBAI. We are in the midst of our membership drive, and you have been quite generous in offering as a premium a signed copy, frameable copy of one of your cartoons that we selected, and it's the most recent one around healthcare. So give a little pitch, and why do people want that cartoon hanging in their home or office?
Of course, cartoons make great wall hangings. Let me just say, I wholly encourage people to, line their walls with them. But aside from that, this particular cartoon it's called Dose of Their Own Medicine, and it was my attempt to give the same sort of breathless, hyperbolic treatment to all the pundits who said, oh, Obamacare is a train wreck, this is just a giant failure, and the people, that message that you kept hearing in the media over and over for months last fall and into the early part of this year, it seems that they were proven wrong, and things are actually going pretty well with the number of sign-ups, and a very high percent. I think 91% of people are in fact paying their premiums on time, and so it's actually working. And so this cartoon is just an effort to turn the tables on those people and ask, why were your predictions such a train wreck? you were just as wrong as you accused Obama of being. I got a little payback there.
Payback to the pundits. Well, yes. Thank you so much, Jen Sorensen, for joining me on Health Styles. Jen Sorensen, you can find out more about her and her work at jensorensen.com. Follow her on Twitter at Jen Sorensen, JenSorensen. Please keep us laughing. In the midst of all of these struggles, many people struggle more every single day. We do need the lightness of laughter and the clearness of your message that is so persuasive to help us continue to be activists to make things better by being engaged politically, following these issues, and when we can, influencing change. So thank you, Jen.
Thank you so much, Barbara.